When Congress reached a deal to raise the debt ceiling earlier this month, a lot of the work was left undone. A super committee now has until Thanksgiving to find a way to cut more than $1 trillion from the federal deficit over the next decade. That committee is made up of 6 Republicans and 6 Democrats, one of whom is a congressman from here in Southern California. His entire district is within the city of Los Angeles. NPR's Aina Jaffe has this profile.
As politicians go, Javier Becerra has a relatively low profile considering that he's been in Congress for 18 years. He's the vice chair of the Democratic Caucus, the former head of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, and the first Latino to serve on the powerful Ways and Means Committee. When the Democrats had the House majority, Nancy Pelosi appointed him to the new post of assistant to the Speaker. There's a reason for Becerra's success, says California Congresswoman Grace Napolitano.
He works well with Republican and Democrat, not just on our side. And the respect that he has in Congress from other members is very evident because they do rely on his advice.
Becerra is also the top Democrat on the Subcommittee on Social Security, a program he said should be protected from cuts in an interview on ABC.
Do I believe that Republicans should succeed in cutting Social Security benefits for seniors when Social Security didn't add one single penny to these deficits and this national debt that we have today? I don't.
That interview took place before Congress made a deal on raising the debt ceiling, before there was a super committee. But in that same interview, Becerra sounded as if he knew what he'd soon be facing.
To be a true negotiator, you have to say, I'm willing to put my ego and my Kool-Aid aside and go to the negotiating table and try to reach out a deal with folks who I don't totally agree with.
Now that Becerra is on the nation's most closely watched panel of negotiators, you can expect him to work really, really hard at it, says Arturo Vargas, the executive director of the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. More to the point, perhaps, Vargas has known Becerra since 1980, when they were both attending Stanford.
As a law student, he really hit the books and came across as sort of this clean-cut, Boy Scout, milk-drinking type of individual. In fact, was, I would say, a model student.
In recent elections, Becerra's won more than 80% of the vote in his district. But during his career, he's also faced political setbacks, arguably of his own making. During his first term in Congress, he took on the late legendary congressional power broker Dan Rostenkowski, unsuccessfully opposing him over cuts in benefits to legal immigrants. Later, his trip to Cuba caused Republican lawmakers from Florida to quit the Hispanic caucus he then led. Reportedly, he even got on the wrong side of his mentor, Nancy Pelosi, when he complained that party leaders had too quickly abandoned the public option in the health care overhaul. But what some analysts have seen as mistakes, Arturo Vargas sees as a plus.
I think the fact that he's willing to stand up to his leadership, to be a maverick, has earned him respect. I think it will serve him well on this super committee because it sends the signals that he's not just going to toe the party line.
There will have to be a lot of people like that on the super committee, or this small select group may fail on a very large stage. Aina Jaffe, NPR News.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Many policymakers are looking to entrepreneurs to help create jobs in this tough economy, though immigration laws make that a challenge for those who are highly skilled but foreign-born. That's why the White House announced policy changes this month for granting visas to those looking to launch startups. For instance, an applicant for a work visa will no longer necessarily have to have a job offer from an existing U.S. company. NPR's Wendy Kaufman reports that for some entrepreneurs, the changes may be too late.
Andrew Nickel is a young entrepreneur. He was born in Australia but attended law school in the U.S. After graduation, he got an employer-sponsored visa that allowed him to work in New York. But when Nickel wanted to leave his day job and start a company, he was stymied. Leaving his job meant losing his visa, so Nickel decided to go to Chile, and that's where we found him.
I'm basically leaving New York to come to Santiago to start a business that targets New York consumers. just because it's so much easier to do it from here and because, you know, there's so much more support for it from the government here.
Nicol is participating in a program called Startup Chile. It's a government-sponsored effort which offers entrepreneurs visas and $40,000 to help them start their business.
Chile has been taking advantage of American stupidity.
That's Vivek Wadhwa, a visiting scholar at the University of California, Berkeley. He studies the economic impact of immigrant entrepreneurs, and when we tracked him down, he didn't mince words.
The entire immigration system is a big mess. There are thousands of entrepreneurs who want to start companies in America who can't get visas.
The White House agrees too many highly skilled entrepreneurs are being shut out, and its new visa rules aim to address that by increasing the number of entrepreneurs who can come to the U.S. and making it easier for entrepreneurs or would-be entrepreneurs who are already here to stay. But speaking to us from a Startup Chile event in Santiago, which he helped to create, Vivek Wadhwa says the changes don't go far enough.
There are 150 companies here right now. Amazing, amazing companies in almost every area you can think of.
These entrepreneurs moved to Chile before the U.S. changed its visa policy, but they're unlikely to go to the U.S. now.
I've spoken to about 50 people today. At least half of them said that if they had a chance to come to America, they would have been there today. They would have been in Silicon Valley starting their companies there.
I wanted to talk to some of them.
I can get a whole bunch of people on the phone if you want me to.
So I spoke with entrepreneurs from Australia, Italy, and from Brazil, Natalia Monteiro.
My project is Zugi, a safe search engine for kids.
None of their projects seemed like rocket science, but they all had plans to create jobs. Immigrant entrepreneurs, particularly those with highly specialized skills, are in high demand worldwide. Rob Atkinson, who heads a Washington, D.C. think tank focused on innovation and competitiveness, says we need to do more to lure them here.
These are scarce talents, and they're valuable talents, and they end up leading to the creation of a lot of growth companies that end up hiring thousands and thousands of workers.
Or even tens of thousands of workers. In research done while he was at Duke University, Wadhwa found that between 1995 and 2005, roughly half of all the startups in Silicon Valley were started by immigrants. Many innovation and economic development experts are now advocating passage of legislation called the Startup Visa Act. Robert Lighton of the Kauffman Center for Entrepreneurship is among them.
My advice to our elected officials would be, the country's in trouble. Let's not worry about the politics of the larger immigration fight. Let's at least bite off what we can chew now, and let's get those jobs here.
But immigration reform is politically charged, and the broad changes being advocated by many require congressional action. Since that doesn't seem likely, the more modest reform efforts will have to suffice, at least for now. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
After Labor Day, the White House says President Obama will release new proposals for job creation. In the meantime, the Congressional Black Caucus has been highlighting the particularly steep unemployment rate among African Americans. The CBC's Jobs Tour has been visiting cities to help connect blacks with potential employers. Yesterday, it stopped in Atlanta, and Charles Edwards of member station WABE was there.
On a hot Georgia day, Courtney Williams is in a suit, and she's walking to the back of a very long line.
This is normal from what I've been going through.
The former school teacher has been unemployed for a year. She's one of thousands of African Americans here, holding their resumes in one hand and hope in the other, outside a job fair in Atlanta. Williams will have to wait at least 2 hours with no guarantee of a job, let alone an interview.
It's been tough. I mean, it's been tough. A lot of people are saying that I'm overqualified. A lot of people don't have a lot of openings. They're not really looking to hire people. So it's been tough.
It's also been tough for Alex Adams. A telecommunications company laid him off 2 years ago. He's gone from being a marketing director to working part-time in a warehouse.
My last job was close to six figures.
And can you give me a range of what you're making now between jobs?
Oh, not even a third of what I was making before.
Unless you have something like this, you don't even get a sense of how bad it is in America.
To find out how bad it is, Congresswoman Maxine Waters and the rest of the Congressional Black Caucus said they wanted to get out of Washington.
We focused so much on raising the debt ceiling before we left, jobs got off the agenda. People have talked about creating infrastructure jobs. They talk about green jobs, but nothing has happened.
And Waters says it needs to happen, especially for black people, whose 16% unemployment rate is double that of whites. Before Atlanta, the caucus's job fair was in Cleveland and Detroit. It's going next to Miami and then Los Angeles. The caucus is just one of a chorus of voices concerned President Obama's policies aren't doing enough to help black people. As an example, Waters says, Mr. Obama compromised too much in the debt ceiling debate.
The only thing that I think the president should be aware of is people want him to fight. They said, don't back down from that Tea Party. Don't let them have their way.
Waters says several caucus bills targeting the black unemployment rate are stuck in the Republican-controlled House. Georgia Congressman John Lewis, a civil rights icon, says marches may not be the answer this time, but something has to give.
As representative of the people, we have a moral obligation to stand up, to speak up, to speak out, and do what I call get in the way. Sometimes you have to make some noise. You have to stir the order of things.
Back in that long line, Ernestine Shipman waits her turn to enter. She used to own a Quiznos fast food restaurant, but it went under in March. Shipman's glad the mostly Democratic Congressional Black Caucus put on the job fair, but she wants more than just talk.
The Republicans trying to make their hand show, and the Democrats are trying to make their hand show, and the people are suffering in the process.
Shipman says this isn't the first job fair she's stood in line for, and so far she's yet to leave any of them with an employment offer. For NPR News, I'm Charles Edwards in Atlanta.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
There's a disturbing trend in these dog days of summer. Dog theft is on the rise. So far, 2011 has seen a 49% increase in dog nappings. That's according to data gathered by the American Kennel Club. Lisa Peterson is spokesperson for the AKC, and she joins us now from New York City to tell us more about it. Lisa Peterson, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jackie.
Well, this is disturbing. Why is there such an increase in dog nappings?
Well, the American Kennel Club has been tracking pet theft for several years now, and we believe the increase is due to economic times. You have people who want pets, either purebreds or mixed breeds, but can't afford to purchase them or pay the adoption fee, so we find that they're just taking them for themselves or to give them as gifts. But then on the other hand, you have the criminal element that steals dogs and tries to sell them to unsuspecting buyers.
I think we've all seen various cities outside the coffee shop, bookstore, you name it. Somebody goes in. Of course, the animals are usually not allowed to come in, and they're tied up out on the street. Is that how pets are getting stolen, or are people coming into homes, or what?
Actually, all of the above. I'd say the two top ways dogs are being stolen are during home invasions. For example, in Florida, there was a home where the criminals took a 55-inch television and also Boo Boo the Yorkshire Terrier and all his belongings. We also see dogs being taken out of parked cars. You know, you go to run an errand, you leave the dog in the car, you're gone 10 minutes, you come back, the car's been broken into, maybe the stereo, the GPS, and the dog have been stolen. So it's really a variety of different ways, including being tied up to a in front of a store. I mean, that makes your dog just extremely vulnerable for pet theft.
You know, there's something so heartbreaking about a dog being stolen. It sort of seems like the ultimate indignity.
You know, dogs thrive on routine, and they love their owners, and we love them too. I mean, they're valued family members. So there's actually two victims to the crime here. There's the owner who's missing their lovable pet, and also the poor dog is suffering perhaps a little anxiety, not knowing what's going on. You know, it can be traumatic for both parties.
I imagine many people are wondering what steps they can take to protect their pets.
Well, the number one step that you can take to protect your pet, especially in recovery to get it back, is to have it permanently identified with a microchip. But, you know, more common sense, close to home things, don't let your dog off your leash. Don't leave him unattended in your yard. You know, we've seen dogs taken out of backyards, certainly. And also, be cautious with information that you give to strangers about your dog. We saw a man in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who was approached by a man in a park, asked him about his adorable pit bull puppy. Then apparently the criminal followed him home, and the next morning broke into the house, tied up the family at gunpoint, and stole the puppy.
Wow. Well, we'll hope that by getting the word out, this kind of thing decreases. Lisa Peterson is the spokesperson for the American Kennel Club. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie.
This is NPR News.